WBAI New York and on the internet at WBAI.org. The program you just heard, Labrish with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week following the at 2, following the work of the Midnight Ravers. Stay tuned. It is 5 o'clock right here in New York, and stay tuned for Back of the Book, brought to you right here.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the Feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay, okay, we went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
I'm sure it's about 5 a.m. and you're listening to all. Aw, they were just behaving like tourists. Radio WBAR New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners wherever they may be.
Indeed. And we're going to talk about various things here on this program. You can find out a little bit more about what we're going to talk about by going up to my website at glib.com. That's glib.com. And you can look around at things up there. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of your screen. At the top of that, it will say latest Back of the Book program links. Click on that. You'll be at the webpage for tonight's program. And the WBAI website and the archives all seem to be functioning. This is our 43rd pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between Friday afternoon and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referring to them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. Okay, top story of the week. We are holding at 108 followers on Twitter, and the world feels so good about that. The world feels, yes, we're recovering. And the next public WBAI local station board meeting is scheduled to be held on Wednesday, June 9th, 2021 at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. And we had an LSB meeting. We call the local station board the LSB. We had a meeting this past Wednesday night, and the LSB passed some motions that I can't discuss on the air. One motion, I'm glad to say, failed by a vote of 0-4 and 18 against. The other two motions relating to an issue that I can't discuss on the air passed without objection, and you should be hearing more about this stuff in the next 2 or 3 weeks, and if you poke around on the Pacifica.org website, you will be able to maybe figure out what I'm talking about here. And according to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole wide world reached 161,390,677 on Friday. Global deaths reached 3,348,952. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 32,887,176, and the death toll in America was 585,162. So 4,358 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 1 week ago. So this week's death rate is noticeably lower than last week's, and we are under 5,000 dead in America per week as a steady thing these days, it seems, but that's still an enormous number of people. 5,358 people dying in 1 week. When would we have thought of that as not big news in the past? We would be utterly amazed. That's more than died in the 9/11 attacks. And it's more than died at Pearl Harbor. It's ongoing. And it, Jesus Christ, and it's been 14 months of this kind of thing. We live in truly interesting times. In any event, now it seems New York City is opening up, and we're seeing people getting ready to go there. And what is it? Tomorrow it all opens up? No, Monday. Is it Monday it all opens up?
I believe so. And I think, and this coming week, the subway is going to go back to being 24 hours a day.
And full of crazy people who are having murderous intent a lot of the time. Oh, boy. Anyway, so we have New York City opening up, and how's that going to work? And by the time this program airs on Saturday morning, of course, all of the figures we've just quoted from Johns Hopkins are going to be higher. Now, India, with 24,046,809 cases, has now surpassed Brazil as the second most COVID-19 infected country in the world. Although Brazil still has more deaths, with 430,417 as opposed to India's 262,317. So, geez. They're catching up. America, of course, is still number one in both number of cases and the number of deaths within America. And we know whom we can blame all of that for. On our last program, we talked about being ill, the two of us, and Pickles seems to be all better, although she's having allergies happening right now. And I'm better, I think, but not completely over whatever we got. I still have some coughing going on, which can be annoying at the wrong moment. And we are again hoping to go out for fun this next week. And if I'm able to, we're going to do it. We'll see if I can manage it. And if I can, we'll do it. So I've been locked in pretty much for 14 months. I've been out 4 times in 14 months. 3 of the times were to get inoculations for either the flu or the Pfizer vaccine. 1 time, I accompanied Pickles to buy a newspaper. Oh, big adventure our Paul has. I live an exciting life. And however, Pickles of the North has had an adventure recently, and she's revisited something. So Gee whiz, kiddo. First time in 14 months, eh?
Oh, my gosh.
Tell us about it.
14 months and it was 14 months and a day I had visited our dear friends, part of our chosen family here in New York City, the M&Ms, as we like to call them, and I, their daughter. So I hadn't been on the subway for 14 months, but we're all vaccinated, so we know it's okay to get together and be together at pretty much have a normal visit. So I put on my mask and I descended into the subway, and the first thing that struck me was no pee-pee smell. No pee-pee smell at all. And that's from all that constant cleaning plus shutting the subway down for, you know, overnight. And far fewer people on the subway. And you could really tell that when you got on. I mean, there were enough people that I felt comfortable, but it wasn't normal. It's still not normal.
And also, I guess, just less pee-pee being deposited.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yes. You know, and even everything looks cleaner, too, down there, including the walls, and the train certainly was. So, and people were mostly wearing their masks, although apparently the news, by the time I got back from my adventure, the news on mask wearing had changed. But most people had their masks on, although some people came in and their masks were under their chins or not wearing one at all. So anyway, pretty quiet trip, except for the one guy. Some things are still normal. One guy walking through the car saying, "Yes, instead of robbing you, I'm going to try and sell you candy," which is always like an interesting sales pitch. He didn't get too many takers. And then, of course, the musicians, and I use the term loosely, who bring their like drums onto the car and then play and sing, rap, sort of, and then berate everyone for not being friendly enough to them or giving them enough money. And they start off, I think at first they berated the white people, then they started berating the black people and the Hispanic people. So it was sort of like they tried to be inclusive in their contempt and anger at not making enough dough.
And coercion.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? They didn't get any takers. I think people have just had it. People have had it, and people were just sitting there doing their own things, you know, reading, thinking, listening to their own music. But it was interesting to have some ear-splitting stuff happen on the subway again, because I haven't experienced that in a while. Ugh. Not that fun, but... And at the end of my journey, of course, it was interesting to emerge from the subway and see all the outdoor seating for eateries and taking up sidewalk space and sometimes even street space. And also very wonderful to see our friends again, but also very stressful to take off a mask and be with other people, because I've only done that with you, Arpal. And
yeah, well, you're conditioned, yes, after 14 months to see that mask as a life-saving device.
Yep. And yet, you know, we all were fully vaccinated and had a wonderful meal together and put our masks back on and took a walk in the park. And as our friend M said in an email, you know, he felt exhausted. And I feel exhausted. I'm sure Mrs. M felt exhausted too, because, you know, as much as we love seeing each other and knowing everybody's okay, it's stressful. It's stressful because we have been conditioned to be so careful with one another. But I think it was a wonderful experience, and I look forward to seeing more of our friends who've also been vaccinated. I don't know when this pandemic is going to end.
I wonder how long this is going to affect us, because I think that these 14 months and seeing that, you know, it's what is it now, 585,000 dead in America, and over 3 million, more than 3.3 million dead in the world. How long is this going to affect us? This has been traumatic. And if you go to a war for a year, you end up having the next 50 years PTSD. And how is this going to do it? Because this has been a little longer than a year, and it's been a constant thing. And I wonder if people being born today will be the next people, the only people in the future who will not have some sort of stamp of this pandemic on us all that affects our behavior. Because even the kids are affected by it.
Yeah,
we're just all going to be affected by this, and probably in ways we don't realize yet. But, yep. Cause, and, of course, everybody who's been wearing a mask is now, they're going to say, oh, yeah, we can take it off. But I think most people are going to feel a little bit leery about taking it off because it's been important to have one on. And when you're wearing a mask, you could say, I'm doing stuff to stop myself from getting infected with this potentially deadly disease. And even if it's not deadly right away, it apparently does a bunch of damage to you no matter what.
And you're protecting other people by wearing a mask, too. I mean, this is why it has made me so angry to walk outside our apartment and into our building where so many people have never worn masks. And also look at you with disdain over these 14 months when they see you wearing a mask. Disdain and wry amusement is the only way I can describe it. When it really does help, it has helped keep people alive doing this. When we didn't have any vaccines, it's helped keep people alive. So, yes, and there may be more than 500,000 plus people who have died in this country. The one statistic I saw said it could be closer to 900,000.
Yeah, there was that study we talked about in a previous program where it might have been 905,000 a couple of weeks ago. And that's entirely possible because we talked last time about how coroners in red states seem to be not reporting it and stuff like that. So the death toll in America may be very much higher than 585,000, but there we are.
Well, this is a profound experience that will continue. It's left its mark on all of us in one way or another, and it will continue to do so, and we will see how things unfold.
Yeah, and still there are idiots who want to bring back the jackass who's really responsible for America getting it like this. In other news, Ingenuity, the only helicopter on Mars, is done being tested. On its fourth flight, it took a color image of its future landing site. It made its fifth flight while we were recording last week's program. And the information about the fifth flight was not online until 7:31 p.m. last time, so we couldn't talk about it till this program. The NASA website says, quote, Ingenuity completed its fifth flight on the Red Planet last Friday with its first one-way journey from Wright Brothers Field to an airfield 423 feet, 129 meters, to the south. After arrival above its new airfield, Ingenuity climbed to an altitude record of 33 feet, 10 meters, and captured high-resolution color images of its new neighborhood before touching down. The flight represents the rotorcraft's transition to its new operations demonstration phase. This phase will focus on investigating what kind of capabilities a rotorcraft operating on Mars can provide. Examples include scouting, aerial observations of areas not accessible by a rover, and detailed stereo imaging from atmospheric altitudes. These operations and the lessons learned from them could significantly benefit future aerial exploration of Mars and other worlds. When it touches down at its new location, we will embark on a new demonstration phase, one where we exhibit what this new technology can do to assist other missions down the road, unquote. And the fifth flight lasted for 108 seconds. Bob Balaram, chief engineer for Ingenuity Mars Helicopter at JPL, said, quote, the plan forward is to fly Ingenuity in a manner that does not reduce the pace of Perseverance science operations. We may get a couple more flights in over the next few weeks, and then the agency will evaluate how we're doing. We have already been able to gather all the flight performance data that we originally came here to collect. Now, this new operations demo gives us an opportunity to further expand our knowledge of flying machines on other planets. Unquote.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, by now we're getting a bit used to winter. We're like soldiers in the middle of a campaign, growing hardened to discomfort and better able to take it, and looking with longing toward the day when the war is won and there'll be plenty of everything again, including that good Olga Cole. But like good soldiers, we can't afford to let down now that victory is in sight. We must work harder than ever to get every bit of heat from the coal we get, make it go further and use less. We must figuratively tighten the belts on our coal bins and wade into old man winter with a little less fuel and a little more heat from every ton. That can help make Hitler's ghost walk.
All right. This is WBAI New York, and WBAI New York is listener-sponsored non-commercial radio. And by listener-sponsored, we mean we are sponsored by you, the listeners. We don't run these commercials for Chevys or anything else like that. Well, you may occasionally hear an Olga Cole commercial on this program, or you may hear some Remedy being hawked. And, you know, right now I can now and again feel a little sickish. But, hey, we mostly don't do that. And, of course, when we air those commercials, none of those companies exist anymore. So we don't make anything of them. They're not real anymore. And so what we do is we ask you for money. We get on the air and we beg. And we say, please, if you could, would you please consider calling 1-212-209-2950. Call that number and tell the person at the call center whom you'll reach that you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. You could also tell them you want to make a lump sum one-time donation to WBAI, because if you donate $25 or more in the next, I think it's 2 or 3 weeks, you'll be able to vote in the local station board elections that are coming up this summer, basically. We have something to get out of the way first. Once that's out of the way, we'll have these elections. Again, I can't say what some stuff is. But anyway, yes, so $25 or more makes you a member of BAI, and you get to vote. And you could vote, still become eligible to vote for the LSB elections, which are very important because there are people who want to do stupid things like give this radio station to a cable access outfit. Oh, man, that would be the end of it. And so we got to make sure nobody goes with that. And the only way we can do that is to make sure that the people who want to do that don't end up as a majority on the local station board, which can cause all sorts of problems. Anyway, so 1-212-209-2950, and we'd like you to become a BAI buddy as well, or instead of. I don't think anybody's going to make a BAI buddy donation in time to become a voting member. That's why you need a lump sum. But become a BAI buddy and you'll be helping the station. What is a BAI buddy? A BAI buddy is the name we have for our sustaining membership, which is where you donate a certain amount of money every month to WBAI. And what you do is you call 1-212-209-2950 and you say, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. It's a good idea to say in the name of Back of the Book because that way we get credit for it and management is watching. And so what happens is you tell them you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book and you tell them how much you would like to donate per month. You can donate just $5 a month or $10 or $15 or $20. You could do more than that, but I think $5 to $20 is pretty much in the range of most of our listeners. And you tell them how much you want to donate per month, and you tell them what day of the month you would like your debit card or credit card charged for that amount of money. And then every month on that date that you have designated, the amount of money that you have designated will be charged to your card. And that way you'll be donating to WBAI, and you won't have to worry about, did I forget to do that? So, yeah. And you can sit back while we pitch and say, ah, I've done it, so. Anyway. 1-212-209-2950. And, you know, we talk about a lot of different things here on this program. We do science stuff. We just talked about ingenuity a little bit. We do other things as well. And, we get into the political. We got more political during the Trumpizoid years. And, oh, boy, we just couldn't ignore that stuff. There's some other stuff we can't ignore now. And, oh boy, we gotta raise money, though. We need to raise money. BAI is getting better than it had been. We are able to appeal to more of you out there listening. And I hope that this radio program can appeal to more of you who are listening. And that way we can manage to keep WBAI alive. Because WBAI has not been self-sustaining for a very long time. And so there are people who complain about this in Pacifica, and I can understand that. You know, you got this big radio station, and it can't support itself. It needs the rest of Pacifica to kick in some dough for it. Well, that's a legitimate concern, and apparently we are raising a bit more money in these programs where we pitch like we're doing, and there are occasional preemptions. You get preempted like, what is it, every 2 months or something like that. And so that stuff is going on. And apparently April was a decent month, and we appear to have made more in April than April cost us. The general manager says that it costs about $120,000 a month to run BAI. And we made more than that in April, so that's a good thing. If we could keep that up and make it regular that we make more money than we spend, then we will end up becoming self-sustaining and people can't yell at us as much as they do now. All right, 1-212-209-2950. Please, please, give us a call at that number. Give us a call at that number now. You know, the station and this radio program, they mean something to a bunch of you out there. And you probably wouldn't be listening if you really didn't like the program or if you really didn't like WBAI. So, you know, $5 a month, that's not going to break your bank probably. Just call 1-212-209-2950 and say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And again, you can pledge to have $5 a month or $10 a month or $15 a month or $20 a month charged to your credit card or your debit card, and you'll be donating to BAI every month and doing your part to help keep this strange experiment in radio communications going. All right. Final time for this time. 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call at that number. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. And you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. The Colonial Pipeline Company got hit rather spectacularly with a ransomware attack this past week. Oh, boy. And ransomware has been going around for years and years, but I think this is the highest profile ransomware attack anybody's seen. And ransomware is when some bad guys online get into your computer system or your network and they encrypt all of the data on your hard drive and or solid state drives. And your computer can't do anything anymore in that situation. And all you can see is the demand from the ransomware gang that you pay them some amount of money, usually in some cryptocurrency or another, because cryptocurrencies can't be traced. And the ransomware gang will say they'll send you the encryption key to restore your system. Frequently, they don't. And what this means is, data can be encrypted. When you're online and you're going doing banking, you have encrypted data going back and forth. And it is very easy to take files and encrypt them. I have been known to do that myself for my own stuff. And so all you have to do to make it effectively impossible to undo it is to use some very ordinary encryption software. For instance, the standard AES-256, which is the advanced encryption standard. That's the standard in the United States, although they want to change it, but it's another story. You can just take that and you couple that with a big password, and it is not at all unusual to have a password, or sometimes called a passphrase, that can be like over 100 characters long and constructed of randomly generated or nearly randomly generated characters. And you use that and you encrypt a file. You can do it yourself. You can experiment. And nobody's going to decrypt that. Nation states can't decrypt that stuff. And so what they do is they set things up, and it isn't like they get in and they instantly do something. What they do is they get into your system and they lurk around and they learn more things. If you're on a network, they get into your network. That's what happened to Colonial Pipeline. They get into your network. They go everywhere they can get to in your entire network, not just one computer, but every computer you have and your servers, all of your servers. If you have stuff in the cloud, cloud is advertising. It's really a server somewhere else. And they'll get into that. They look at these things and they learn what you have and they figure it all out. And they spend sometimes weeks or even months seeing what you have. And then they can write up a program and it will automatically start going through all of your data and encrypting it. And once they do that, you have this whole bunch of files that are utterly useless and you can't do anything. All you see, as I said before, was a some screen that usually laughs at you and said, you've been hit by ransomware. You know, they usually give their name and tell you where to send the Bitcoin or other cryptocurrency and how much of it they want. And it's a devastating thing. And this has been going on for some time now, and a lot of places get hit. So, and again, sometimes when you pay them, they don't send you the key. Some of them have no intention of ever giving you the key if you pay. So the ransomware shut down Colonial Pipeline's operations, because it's not just, you know, word processors and stuff like that. They use these computers to control the flow of the various fuels that go through their pipeline. You don't have guys, you know, standing around at valves with it. So you have machines doing it, and that gets encrypted as well. So that all shuts down. And Colonial Pipeline is one of the largest pipeline operators in the United States. And I've read that it provides about 45% of the East Coast's fuel, including gasoline, diesel, home heating oil, jet fuel, etc. And supposedly Colonial transports over 100 million gallons of fuel daily through its pipeline. And the pipeline goes from Texas to New Jersey, and it ends in, I think it's Jersey City, just, you know, basically at New York Harbor, so that it can come here and get distributed from here out to the whole country or whatever else is going on. And so it's a huge pipeline. It's a big operation. Whole thing shut down. And the Colonial Pipeline Company said that they were not going to pay the ransom. They were going to do something about it. They're going to do it themselves. But it's being reported that they paid almost $5 million in cryptocurrency within hours of getting hit by these criminals. I'm also seeing it reported that Colonial got the key from the ransomware gang. And this ransomware gang calls itself DarkSide. And this ransomware gang operates out of Russia or Eastern Europe, but probably Russia. And I've also read that restoration of the company's data via decrypting it via the key that they were sent was going so slowly that Colonial decided to restore everything from backups anyway. So that $5 million was really wasted. Or was it? The other things that ransomware gangs have been doing of late has been to threaten to release your data to the world and to other groups that could use it to cause the company even more problems. So Colonial may have had more fear of this second threat than of the first one that they were already trying to fix. That could be it. The DarkSide group sells, they're vendors. They sell what's called ransomware as a service to other groups of criminals. And so what happens is they get into the system. They know all about it. Now they've got the means to do all of this. And they sell the data and all of that to other groups. And those groups then actually execute the ransomware. And they kick back a percentage to the people that they're doing ransomware as a service from. So it's really amazing. I mean, there are things called botnets, which, you know, do all sorts of bad things. And, it's a terrible way that things get done. And so, yeah, the Colonial may have had a lot more fear of having their data sent out to the world than with the thing we all saw happening. And, you know, part of this is that big companies have been so lax about cybersecurity. This has been true from the beginning. I mean, I saw my first virus in 1989. And by the way, that first virus was on a Mac computer. It was Apple that was infected. And, you know, back then we were saying, geez, you know, we can fight it. Why don't these big companies do something? Because you could see that some of these big companies were so easy to hack. And sometimes hacking kind of went to where in the old days, people started out and you would like put something up on their website. And instead of the Olga Coal Company, it would say, you know, bite my shiny metal ass or something, ha, ha, ha. And it would be more of a prankish thing, but it would still have been something where somebody invaded this company deeply. And there have been complaints by people involved with things related to computers and networks, etc., IT, as it's generally called, information technology. There have been complaints for decades now that the big companies do not pay adequate attention to cybersecurity. They don't think it's worth the money. And here we see that Well, we now have a spectacular example of, was this worth not spending maybe $100,000 a year to harden up your system? Probably would have been better to have had a hardened system. But this is what's going on, and this is bad news. And by the way, this stuff can happen to any of us. They're fishing all the time, and that's one of the ways they get in. Fishing is where you'll get what I get. I get constantly emails that say, oh, this is your mail provider. This is admin@glib.com. Your email account is about to expire. Please log in here and tell us not to make it expire. Well, of course, I know that that's bogus because I'm admin@glib.com. So screw that noise. So it's very easy for me to see that one. And others, you know, but other people who have, like, if you're AOL, I also get them for AOL and Yahoo and everybody else. Gmail, every one of the public companies that does email, they send it out to as many people as possible and say, oh, this is admin@fill-in-the-blank, and your email is about to expire, or something bad is going to happen, or even this is the FBI, and we think you're doing some bad things. Contact us. And the big thing is log into your email and fix it. And so all you have to do is log into your email and click on the thing that says fix it now, and it'll all be fixed. So what you do is, and they give you a link, and you click on that link, and it goes to a place that may well look to people who don't know any better, like the real site. And when you get there, they ask your username and your password. You put that in, and you click fix my stuff, and mostly what happens is then you'll get a message. Okay, everything's fixed. You're hunky-dory. Thanks a lot. Oh, can we have some more information? And they will usually ask for some more information. Even if you don't give them more information, you've just told them about your how to get into your email. And so they're going to do that. And this happens over and over again. They're always doing these kinds of things. This is how they get into companies and everything. This is how the Democrats got hacked for the 2016 election. Podesta fell for phishing. And it was, when they do it really, really specifically, and it's not broad, it's called spear phishing, because it's very much, we know whom we're trying to get, and they got him. And he said, oh yeah, and he did what I just described, and they got into it, and they got themselves into the system, and they gave themselves higher powers in the system, and then they went and did what they did. Anyway, so this stuff is something that could happen to any of us. I've always dreaded the idea that all of my stuff could be wrecked because I wouldn't pay, which would mean I'll never get my data back if they get me. So, oh yeah, this is bad stuff, and I wish there were some way of, like, I don't know, grabbing these scumbags and doing away with them or something. Anyway, an effect of this hack on Colonial Pipeline is a gasoline shortage on the East Coast. So people immediately started hoarding gasoline. One woman, who was down in, some damn Carolina. One woman was fleeing cops in a possibly stolen car, and she crashed, and all of the gas containers in the car exploded. The police described hearing multiple explosions inside the car because she had all these gas cans in the car, and she was hoarding it, and they blew up. And people aren't just putting the gasoline in those plastic gas, quote, cans, unquote, which aren't that safe in and of themselves. They're doing worse. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission has issued the following warning, quote, do not fill plastic bags with gasoline, unquote. This is apparently happening. You know, like a a Ziploc bag that you would put sandwiches in or something like that. And you get a half gallon bag and you fill it with gasoline and then you zip the little zip top. People are apparently doing this. Of course, you know, gasoline is volatile. And, oh, there's so many ways this can go wrong. One, gee, maybe the bag isn't perfect, and now you've got it somewhere, and all of a sudden you notice, oh, there's gasoline on everything. Whoa. Or the top just pops open, and the top could pop open because the gasoline, being volatile, is evaporating inside the bag, and it's pushing against the bag, and enough of that pressure, and it will pop the top. It doesn't have to completely pop it, just make enough so that it can start squirting out. And of course the bag is liable to just break, and all of a sudden you have half a gallon of gasoline in your lap. That can be bad in many ways. Even if it doesn't catch fire, oh, you can have a lot of problems from that. Like the guy who was in his car and smoking a cigarette, and he was squirting hand sanitizer on himself. And, oh, yeah, there's alcohol in the hand sanitizer. Well, he caught fire. They were able to drag him out of his car, and he had minor burns. His whole car was totaled by the fire. So, yeah, people need to watch out with this stuff. But this is all a result of how people reacted to finding out that the place that Colonial Pipeline was hacked and not operative. So I want to say a couple of words here about stuff from 50 years ago. Yes, 50 years ago, the Gay Activist Alliance moved into the Firehouse. It was an old firehouse at 99 Worcester Street, and I think there's an art gallery there now. And it was an actual firehouse, and the city was decommissioning these things in those days. Some guy, I don't know who it was, a straight guy, bought the building for $12,000 at an auction. Imagine getting a Soho building for $12,000. And the inside needed some work, but it wasn't that much work. And so GAA negotiated, and we got a lease on it, and we moved in. And people spent, two or three weeks at least, really refurbishing it, cleaning it up. And also I remember Marty Robinson and Tom Doerr being the first to have sex on the spiral staircase. There was a lot of that. Who had sex in this place first? Okay, it was a lot of that. So in between the construction work, there was some boinking going on. Anyway, so all of that stuff was going on. Yeah, that was an interesting thing. We paid $1,200 a month rent on that thing, which was a gigantic amount of money for the organization. And so, you know, after 10 months, the guy who had bought it, it was all paid for by us. So, Jesus Christ, too bad we couldn't have gotten in the bottom line. And then in 1974, some creeps burned it down. And yes, it was an inside job. And yes, it is known who did it. And yes, the police actually said who did it to some people, but wouldn't prosecute. Why wouldn't they prosecute? Well, one bit might be because of homophobia. Another one might be because the FBI managed to get one of the perpetrators to basically entrap a friend of his as being somebody who was running guns to the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. The guy got found not guilty because he was so obviously entrapped. He was the only one who wasn't either a confidential informant or an FBI agent or some other form of law enforcement and all of that. So we got away with it. So we figure that the two guys, the other guy, we don't know what he might have done to not be prosecuted, but that's what happened. So GAA was only in the firehouse for 3.5 years or so, because it was October of 74 that it was burned. But in May of 71, we moved in there. We were all very glad about it. There was a big mural that went up on the wall. I was in the mural, and all sorts of things happened. So, yeah, I remember that place. The other thing that happened 50 years ago was the Gay Liberation Front imploded. Some of their big leaders had gone to a conference. I don't know. It was far away, maybe Texas or something, or California. I don't know where it was. I forget. Again, it's 50 years ago. I don't remember where somebody else went. And so a lot of the rank and file was left at the Gay Liberation Front. And they had a meeting, and you know how some people will get with, yes, you're not doing enough, you have to do more for the organization, that kind of thing. Oh boy, do I ever know people like that. I know people like that today. And so people get like that. Well, they were doing that at Gay Liberation Front meeting, and I wasn't there, but people reported this to us. And they were having a meeting, and they were going through one of these things of, yes, you're not doing it. But then it became, we're not doing it. You know, I think it started with, you or that group over there isn't doing enough for gay liberation. And I think somebody shot back, you're not doing enough for gay liberation. Well, eventually they came to an agreement. They were all not doing enough for gay liberation. Therefore, none of them was worthy to be members of the Gay Liberation Front, and so they kicked themselves out and dissolved the organization. Oh, man. This was the kind of thing that in GAA we said, oh, God, what a mess. And because Gay Activists Alliance had come out of the Gay Liberation Front because the Gay Liberation Front had been so goofy, and you couldn't really accomplish much. You could get a demo now and again. That was it. You couldn't accomplish more than that. You couldn't, for instance, start writing a gay rights bill and try and get a gay rights law, which is what GAA did. And so what happened was the people who are the bigger deal people and who probably could have tamped that thing down and stopped it weren't there. They were at the big hullabaloo somewhere else. And so the Gay Liberation Front destroyed itself that night. They imploded. And, oh, man. Gay Liberation Front, GLF, gets tons and tons of publicity. I think it's because, oh, you know, you look at them and they were there in 1969, they existed. Well, Gay Activists Alliance existed at the very end of 1969, but GLF was flamboyant, and you could see all these people doing these things. And yeah, that's pretty okay to do if that's all you're going to do, but you need to do more. And whereas Gay Activists Alliance, we had a lot of flamboyance there. You know, we had Sylvia was a member and other people. You know, we had a lot of interesting people at Gay Activists Alliance, but we also had meetings where it wasn't just everybody yells at everybody. We ran meetings by Robert's Rules of Order, something I learned back then that people still have me doing today. And so we ran meetings and we did stuff. We held votes. Okay. It wasn't simply, oh, we all agree on this, right? Okay, we're doing it. No. Okay, we will now vote on the question. And you would raise your hand. Sometimes you would have a roll call vote, which sometimes took a long time, and stuff like that. And we had quorum calls. And so we had, and then we wrote the first gay rights bill in the world and brought it to the New York City Council. And it was history from there on. And so, yeah, Gay Liberation Front gets a whole lot of publicity, but it didn't last long. I mean, in May of 71, they imploded. So there was that. So, yes, we've got some historic things. Oh, also, I guess I shouldn't talk about the Exile, which was a backroom bar that was run illegally. And I had a great deal of fun in there because they let GAA members in. If you showed your GAA membership card, they let you in for free. And, oh, man, yeah, I went to that back room. And so we had fun there. And I was there the night they shut that down because the police came in. I saw the police getting paid off. And but, you know, they didn't let them open up after that. But so, yeah, some gay liberation stuff was going on 50 years ago. And there's that. I want to say a word or two about this moron Congressman Andrew Clyde from Georgia. He started saying some stupid stuff at a congressional hearing titled the Capitol Insurrection Hearing. At it, he said, quote, "Let me be clear, there was no insurrection, and to call it an insurrection, in my opinion, is a bold first lie," unquote. He also said that what he saw in recorded videos looked like, quote, "a normal tourist visit," unquote. He's now complaining that he had also said, but wasn't quoted widely, quote, "there was an undisciplined mob, there were some rioters, and some who committed acts of vandalism," unquote. And then he told a lie when he said, quote, "there were no firearms in the Capitol, at least not from the mob," unquote. We know that some of those idiots were armed with guns. And so the question is Congressman Andrew Clyde from Georgia trying to gaslight everybody and thinks he could pull the wool over everybody's eyes? Or is he so delusional that he actually believes all of this crap he was saying?
Perhaps he gaslighted himself first.
That might be it. All right. Very fast. 1-212-209-2950. If you can call that number, call it and say, "I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book." And you can call them up and make a donation. It would really help. 1-212-209-2950. And there's Mr. Outro Music. And so now it is time for us to go. Okay, we'll be back here next week. Coming up next is
Gary Knowles Spring Special in lieu of Ralph Nader's regular show.
And at 7 o'clock, you'll be able to hear Jim Freund with his program Hour of the Wolf, all about science fiction stuff. Okay, we'll be back here in a week. It's getting nicer and nicer out there. I may actually get out into this middle third in this next week. And all of you should at least look out the window and say how much nicer it looks. And take care of yourselves. And above all, remember what that... He knows there were insurrectionists at the Capitol on January 6th. Dormouse said.
Winding your way down a bay street, light in your head and dead on your feet. Well, another crazy day, you'll drink the night away and forget about everything. This city desert makes you feel so cold. It's got so many people, but it's got no soul, and it's taking you so long to find out you were wrong.
Tune in Tuesday, May 18th from 2 to 4 p.m. to Radio Gag, the Gays Against Guns show. Join me, Navo Zissin, author of The Pronoun Lowdown, to celebrate the life and advocacy of Harvey Milk, along with community advocates, survivors, and other special guests. That's Tuesday, May 18th for Harvey Milk Day on listener-sponsored WBAI.
When trumpets mellow, and every gal only had one fellow. No need to remember.
Hi, I'm David Kenny of Everything Old Is New Again. Every Sunday night at 10, Please join me then, and please support WBAI at our brand new old number, which is 212-209-2950. Again, that's 212-209-2950. Hey, it's our old number, but it's new again. 'Cause everything old is new again. I like it.
This is WBAI, and this is Fred Eagle Smith for WBAI in New York. Stick it in your ear.